This is Betty Smith, Soul Journey, Heroic Path of the Feminine, March 18th and 19th, 1989, tape 3 of 3.
Were it not so, why should I be full of cuts and misery and so often altogether lost? Oh, I'm weary from such wandering. Wandering takes one everywhere, but most of the time it is nowhere. Like a small fledgling, I was dropped into wallless space. How my body and mind have felt those broad contours which are the shape of nowhere. Oh, wandering is the open cry, the unformed word, a phrase without sweet closure of meaning. In wandering there is no dwelling place, and no one received me, no one at all. Io, I receive you. It is a human movement that you speak of. As for the gods, they rarely wander. And when one of them does, why then Olympus is badly shaken. Such is the case when Demeter, in the season of her loss, wanders in search of her abducted daughter. Then there is a goddess who knows this solitary pathlessness. There is indeed. Tell me, she said, do you receive me as a woman or as the white cow? I must know, he says, if I say that I receive the white cow, then you will say that I have abandoned Io in her true essence. If I say that it is the woman I receive, you will accuse me of failing to perceive your bond to the great earth goddess in her pastoral majesty. What would you have of me, dual maiden? Surely your love is like lightning. Can it not penetrate my complexity? Oh, Zeus, without love, I am lost. Io, dear, are you not my bride out of Hera's land? My love for you is true. Have you not known it? It is dense and weighty as honey in winter full risen in the comb. Do you question this? You overwhelm me, Lord Zeus. Yet it is difficult for me to trust this love. I thought that I had been deceiving myself, believing that a god could love one who is merely human. How strange it is that only when I had known this extraordinary love did I become, oddly, not one person any longer, but two. Ah, Io, what if you bear eternity, trailing after you like moonlight silvering the night's path? And yet at every moment, you are fully human. Do you despise this duality that haunts you? I cannot dissolve it, even though you may wish me to. In one person, are you not twins? Like my son, Castor and Polydeuces, one mortal and one immortal. It is not for me to diminish you. Do you remember that fearful moment near the Heraeon when my love, yet afire within me, I touched you for the second time? In that touch, I summoned the eternal cow that grazed within the cave of your being. I did not make you a cow. How could I? Surely this is the profound territory of the goddess. All right, I think that's the... There is another part, but let's pause there. Io, with the love. With the love, or the meaning of this kind of fertilization. Whatever this means, this kind of... being fertilized by a great archetype, great force. And I don't know what you see or how you comment on it. But I'm open to hear what you might. Maybe I can make it more specific with a question. Do you feel that EO is really split into two personalities or two people? Is that the meaning of duality? Or how do you see that? Yes. Why, if they were to become as gods?
What I see.
Same, Dan. If, not sure everybody heard. But that in her duality, in her connection to the goddess, and her connection to her own earthiness and consciousness, that she's more authentic than if she weren't aware of the two sides. Is it, I mean, are you implying that? You seem to speak of it as though it were an evolution or something. I don't know. I don't want to deny that he could even make her a cow, doesn't he? You say, I evoked the cow. I summoned in touching you the eternal cow that grazed within you in the cave of your being. But he said he couldn't have made the cow. Yes. I personally have, in so far in my writing about this journey, have sort of assumed or come to the feeling that that Hera is the taskmistress of this journey, but it may not be correct. I mean, Zeus's love was there. He was the initiator. He, with the help of Aphrodite, was the initiator. And he has a great interest in this journey. And I don't know that it has to be either or. But it was important to me to see Hera as taskmistress, because it explains a lot why she's so black in this myth. Yes? And so if Hera is doing this to me, she's a very dark goddess. You know, that's by definition. There is that aspect to it. Now, this next part is only part of two pages. It's the last part of the Dodona encounter. Zeus says to Io, "This journey of yours has already been a long and arduous one, nor does your goddess Hera relinquish her own," I think. Hera does not relinquish her own. "There's the thorn of it. Tell me, Io, you have come to remote Dodona here in the rugged Pindus Mountains, not by chance, surely. As the gadfly has plagued me, there is a question that has equally harassed me. No," at least she says this, whether she just thought it up, I don't know. "No, I purpose to come here to seek your oracle, although my wanderings assailed and confused me in the search for the road. A question? Ah, what is it then? It is this: where is the road that I am to follow, and what is its name? Will you not show me the map?" Hearing her question, the Lord of the Oracle appeared startled, for the large bronze encircling cauldron set up a low, vibrating chorus of sound. Still, no answer was immediately forthcoming. "I only ask for a map, Lord Zeus. The barefoot Selene, The priest regarded her somberly within the circle under the spreading oak. And after a period of silence, a new tremor assailed the great oak tree itself, and not one leaf escaped the tremor. But the whole tree shook itself entirely. Io, her eyes large and watchful, waited. She was fearful and silent within the sacred enclosure. Then the message came, seeming to imprint itself relentlessly upon the nude flesh of the maiden beneath the cow skin. And this is the message of the oracle as it came in dialogue. Daughter of Inachus, priestess of Hera, woman of Argos, you have come at last seeking my oracle. Look about you and know that you are in the place of hearing. Were this not so, it were useless for me to speak, for great is the economy of the gods. Io nodded that she understood. Very well, then. As for the road you seek, there is none, and therefore it has neither name nor map. The words of the oracle echoed in her ears and kept rhythm to the trembling of the oak leaves before her eyes, although there was no wind. There is no road, and therefore no map. The heifer woman pressed her. Her cheeks and tears began to flow, and she cried, "O Zeus, are you without mercy or kindness in your heart? Behold, Io, the lost one." Then it was that Zeus, who had been invisible until this moment, now stood forth beside Io, and his look was intense and yet tender. His voice was low as he spoke. "My beloved," he said, "this time will pass, but only if you valiantly continue your journey. Believe me, Io." "I am to continue then? I'm to go on the road that is no road at all, leading nowhere?" "No. Listen well. The road, like myself, a god, is not a thing to be perceived and considered. Rather, this road will appear as you go on your destined way. Io, know this. It is you who are the creator of the way, not some traveler that preceded you. Only later, when you shall look back from your human dwelling place, will you be able to give the road a name. But a map is out of the question." "Ah, Zeus, I thought you to be loveless and cold towards me. But at last, your words shimmer before me with some light, not unlike the first rose of dawn. Some odd comfort comes in small measure to assuage my anguish. And now only one anxiety remains. And what is that? I do not know whether I can continue all alone. On the steep slope of Mount Acraea," Zeus says, "on the steep slope of Mount Acraea, did not Hermes find you with the wretched shepherd guard Argus? And removing Argus, he himself led you forth and set you on your journey out of Argos, your city, departing Hera's country. That was long ago. Hermes is god of the road, and he's never far from you." There's the answer. "He is never far from you. Go with Hermes, for he will unburden your step. And now, Farewell, dear Io. She thought his caress lingered upon her back as the Lord of the Oracle left her. And that's not an easy encounter. I think that Io could move towards Dodona or on to the next stop that she makes. We know of one more stop. If the logos or wisdom was not maturing in her process, I mean, to make it more inward for the moment or more psychological, it has been the wisdom or the logos is getting ready. It's maturing. It's being generated in this long and difficult process. For the ancients, hearing an oracle was not an intellectual forum in which you entertained the opinion of an authority on an important matter. No one listened from the core of one's being. The few words given one then were taken as the wisdom for one's direction or meaning. And this gave the kind of marvelous sense, gem-like sense, of those few words that would be given in an oracle. Okay. And there's something else that's changed in Io, or certainly has to change in the modern individual by the time of the Dodona stop. And that is, one has to get beyond the category of the interesting. That's a term that Kierkegaard uses. It speaks of the category of the interesting claiming us most of the time. He calls it the aesthetic category. I'm not sure I like that term, but the category of the interesting, which is different from the category of existence, of really how things are. But it's kind of being fascinated, being interested, taking a bit of this, a bit of that. I mean, it encourages the bit of this and the bit of that. But it doesn't have the total kind of life in it, commitment in it, that one that Io has when she approaches Dodona. Her life depends on the word, and her listening is to listen for what will help her survive as who she is, as the soul maiden. Now, I think this particular being. So it's not just ego choices as creative the way, but Io's whole process creates the way. Yeah. Thank you for putting a finger on that part, because I think that is an essential difference when he says that. Yeah, to be visible and to make these more connecting words to her. You know, first he says there's no place, there's no way, it has no name, and it has no map. There's no road, no name of it, no map. And then, what is her reaction?
She says you have no mercy.
No mercy, no kindness. And does she appeal to his love for her? Okay. Kind of does, doesn't she? Well, she just says, "Behold, Io." I mean, remember who I am. You know, she doesn't have to amplify it any more than that. "Behold, Io, the lost one." And then he becomes visible and speaks to her tenderly and...
She becomes visible. Then he can become visible.
She becomes, yes, because she
names herself.
Yes, she names herself.
And exposes herself.
And exposes herself.
Behold.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. That's very true.
He couldn't become visible unless she did.
Yeah, I think that's a most important observation. Yeah. And then she's open.
At that moment, she's with herself.
Yes.
In her despair?
Yes, in her despair. And I think a powerful eros is there, don't you? In the beholding. You know, in the beholding. Both exposed to each other. Very powerful eros is there. That kind of brings Zeus to earth and to his feeling. And her. Bringing this in, but it's just a little psychological note. Because we have used this term, the darkness, the angst, the really miserable experience that has been part of the journey under the Cal form. We've also seen, this occurred in the dialogue, there is a reconnecting to Aphrodite maybe at one time. Certainly there must be some experience of the satisfyingness in nature also. But I wanted to say that when we talk about the dark night of the soul, I don't think that's equivalent. Now, I don't know whether we can quibble this much, but I hope it's not merely quibbling. I don't think it's equivalent to the state of depression, the dark night of the soul. It feels to me as if grief, loss, sadness, disorientation, some of these other experiences, despair, find the soul very much alive but suffering. Grief, loss, sadness, despair. You can add some others to it. But if you get into a state of total meaninglessness or depression, I mean, when not that we don't at times, it seems to me it's more of a disconnection from the soul rather than the soul's dark journey. Much more of a... But you know, when you're in a dark place, you can't make all those distinctions. But when you're in a lighter place, you can look back and see... Actually, the state of grief, for example, that occurs in the myth of Demeter is a very important and fertile time, I think, for Demeter. I mean, it's not pleasant, but where she's grieving for the loss of Persephone, it's an intense suffering experience for her, for the goddess. She seems quite human at that point, but she's very alive in the grief. And the value of Persephone is very outstanding to her. What she has lost is just a vision to her of great vitality. She's not dead and depressed, and nothing means anything anywhere, anyhow. It's not. She's connected to the soul, and maybe that's narrowing it down a bit, but. The soul is moving forward. Maybe I can say it more. It seems to me that it feels to me more fruitful in the psyche when I experience something like these things of grief, loss, sadness as the darkness. Depression doesn't seem to go anywhere. But the other things move, and the soul moves with them. It's possible. It's possible for there to be a movement. There's no movement that's just automatic unless one is following the self or pulled by the self in some important manner. So I don't know, that's just the way it seems to me. Now, it also, I've brought that in because it seems to me an optimistic view of what we call dark times. That those dark times are often the times when The inner world is so vital. This is knows things, values things, perceives things. Is very alive, even though you don't feel very well about things, even though it's not pleasant. It's very, very alive. And if that's the way this journey of EO feels to me, very, very alive. All right. It's not the modern neurosis of just blankness and depression. For this to begin to shape up and help them. I feel that Hera is a very important aspect of the greater self throughout the myth, and the self is not always light and sometimes is dark. But Zeus is also an aspect of the greater self, and Aphrodite, the way they come. Now, Io's wanderings took her northward past the city. This goes back a little bit. When she first came out of the Peloponnesus, she goes past Athens, Thebes, Mount Helicon, the place of the Muses, and then she goes up Thessaly's plain, and then she climbs the Pindus Mountains, going from east to west, and comes to Dodona. But at last she swims the Aegean Sea, she goes back east across the mountains and to the sea, and swims over to Asia Minor, and goes along the Black Sea, swims the Bosphorus, and which takes her name, and finally comes to Mount Caucasus. She climbs towards the desolate crags of Caucasus. And as she ascended the mountain, she noted a soaring eagle over the summit, and a vulture as well. She was now into a frozen, snow-laden world. This is much higher than the mountains of Greece. Yet far off was a giant form on the crag who appeared to be fastened to a naked rock. She knew that she must approach. Perhaps this would be the oracle that she sought, for the oracle of Zeus had dimmed now somewhat. The powerful man-god groaned as she drew near him, and he addressed her. He's approaching the crag. And the man-god said, he gazed down upon the white heifer, "How is it that you come to this savage wilderness, daughter of Inachus? Has the love of Zeus driven you so far?" Io gazed at him in wonder. "This one not only knows that I am a woman, but he knows who I am. Io, I am before you, my lord. You must be Prometheus, then, the fire giver." "Yes, we are alike, Io, both of us highly honored by Zeus, and both bound to him by a hard fate. As you see, I am chained to this rock, while you have been bound to the wanderer's path." What an awesome meeting in this appalling place. "Having laboriously climbed my crag, you are in the place of ordeal. For your sake, I wish I could offer you something more pleasant. Surely endless wandering without arriving is as much an ordeal as being bound to the rock. Io, in this place, we know a kinship, you and I. Tell me, daughter of Inachus, What has happened to you in these many months since you left Argos, city of queenly Hera? She shook her head incredulously. My tale is a strange one, even to my own ears. It has no language for the telling, my lord. When a god has crossed one's path, a baffling text is written over one's life. And it certainly was cunning Zeus who sought you out. I expect that he came straight through Hera's stone temple walls, golden as Apollo, to claim you. Oh, no, Lord Prometheus, it was not that way at all. I should have been dreadfully in awe of golden Apollo. And do you mean to tell me that you were not in awe of Zeus? No, not in the least. What should I have to fear in a pleasant cloud, I ask you? What indeed, he said, dryly. So he came to you as the cloud in the meadow. I perceive that you, priestess of Hera, were spunky enough to ramble alone in meadows. That's no small requisite for meeting the likes of Zeus, if this is to be understood. I do not believe that it shall be understood ever. Zeus is your lover, and you are a woman, so that you do not wish it to be understood. Did you see Zeus again? Yes, many times. The cloud was often present to me and brought an ecstasy to my being, yet I only beheld Zeus's face and heard his voice speaking clearly to me on two occasions. The second time that he appeared in his manly form, he bestowed upon me the heifer skin that I have gone under ever since. Ah, yes. So you have withstood the second sacred touch which sets you upon your arduous journey. I should not have set one foot out of the city of Argos had Lord Hermes not come to untether me and set me on the path northward. Ah, if Hermes has set you upon the journey, it is a noble one. You are marked as one who goes with gods, then. Bulls, she says rather dryly, bulls, cows, and goats are mostly all I've seen to speak of. Be patient, woman. You have clearly not perceived all that you might. Tell me, Io, how do you perceive yourself now? I am the wanderer. On solitary paths I go, paths that draw me with their promise, but which lead to no abiding place. There's no home anywhere for me, no dwelling place that fits me. Can you understand this, you who are bound to Caucasus Rock? For I believe that you too are an outsider. It is a mild description of me, my dear. Is it any wonder that all who see me say, there goes the wanderer upon the earth, Io has no place to lay her head. It is enough. My counsel to you, Io, is this. Forget the wanderer. She was shocked and then hurt. Forget the wanderer? Forget who I am? Ah, but is it really you who are the wanderer? I think not. The wanderer faces you and is your twin, and her hand has rested heavily upon you, compelling you. Have you two not been inseparable while you saw through her eyes, breathe through her nostrils while her pulse beat in your veins? Without your twin, you would never have left home and temple, never have found the solitary meadow open to the god world. Because of the wanderer, you have found the boldness for taking perilous roads without a backward look. my twin companion, invisible like Polydeuces, who never left his brother Castor's side, perhaps. Well, she served me well on this trek. Indeed she has. But her season is passing for you, and if you continue her restless roaming, you shall never recognize the place for dwelling when it appears. This is why I say to you, you must soon separate from the wanderer. And what if I cannot? Wandering is all that I've known for so long. Its freedom is in my blood. And he said, oh, I forgot she said that. Its freedom is in my blood. He said, soon this wretched freedom will be overcome. If the wanderer lures you into ceaseless roaming, I shall have little hope for you and for the journey that Zeus and Hermes and Hera have set you upon. For you have gazed into your own mirror and have seen there only the wanderer. You have gazed into your own mirror and have seen there only the wanderer. Don't you understand? Io is ever more than this or that. You are in danger of losing Io, I tell you. With these stern words spoken, Io was left gazing wordlessly at Prometheus, while the great eagle looked up out of his Zeus-black eyes and flapped his wings ominously. Prometheus' dark look held for a long time, searching her pale face. At last, when he spoke, his voice was quieter, as one who muses alone. A woman is many things, and yet she is no thing at all. A fount is Io, or the window through which the gods gaze. Io seemed not to hear. In her mind, the question was forming. Lord Prometheus, I should not have climbed this frightening crag, except that I had to consult your oracle. What would you ask me then? Already you have answered me what I did not ask. Now will you also answer me what I have been long in anguish to know? Did you not journey first to Dodona to consult Zeus in his oracle of the ancient oak tree? Surely you inquired of Zeus. She nodded vigorously. But tell me, what is it you desire to know? Oh, what lies ahead for me? What lies ahead for me? A great journey lies ahead of you. No. I should rather die than take to the lonely road once more. Dying is not an option for you, woman. There is a difference now in your travel. You are not to go as wanderer, as we have said. You shall enter the Scythian land and other far places until you come to the Amazons who live on the river Thermodon. They shall guide you on your way at that point, but I warn you, do not linger with the fierce ladies. Io received this recital of her future journey with quiet weeping. Take heart, Io. Something wondrous does await you. You know this? I do. It will happen in the land where the mighty Nile sends out its arms to the sea. Egypt. But Egypt is so far. Do not despair, for one who is loved by God has a long season of ripe. Io, listen to me. Look at me. There, that's better. In Egypt, you will find a beautiful dwelling place, and there you shall abide and rest at last. There shall your son be born, and he shall be called Epaphus, Epaphras. Furthermore, although this will sound most unlikely of all to your ears, in Egypt, you shall be queen. The words of the oracle are filled as with a treasure. But Lord Prometheus, being able to believe is so difficult for me. Belief? Belief is a luxury that does not matter much, actually. When the Cori was carried off by Lord Hades, did she believe that she would be reunited with Demeter? Did Helen believe that she would have an untroubled life with her lover Paris? Did Semele believe that she could enlarge her knowledge of Zeus by asking to see his thunderbolt? The events that might become sturdy when one steps forward resolutely upon the path the fates have decreed. It all would seem to have little to do with throwing a bone of belief to the questioning mind. Do not delay any longer, Io. So be it. My heart is grateful to you, Prometheus, divine outcast of this godforsaken place. Ah, dear, it is anything but godforsaken. True, I have known primarily the thundering face of Zeus. Is there not a way that I can relieve your fate? There is. It is this. Nurse well Epaphus, your son and Zeus's in Egypt, because in generations to come, Heracles will spring from this line, the mighty hero Heracles. It is Heracles who will come to release me from my bondage to the rock. Only continue faithfully on your way. This is my oracle. Farewell, Io. I go with God. That's her visit to Prometheus. And the child of this union is to be of Zeus, and Io is Epaphus, and it means child of the touch. Whose touch was it? Zeus's touch. In general, the experience of touch would be related to what god or goddess, do you think? I mean, the notion of touch. Really Aphrodite world. Uh-huh. Touch isn't always erotic, but neither is... But it's a sensuous feel that affects one. This is child of the touch that will be born. Now Prometheus was the great was a Titan, was the former race of gods, and uncle of Zeus, and. You know, for his fire stealing, his outsider deed, outside of the Olympian dynasty hierarchy, he is punished, you know, by the vulture at his liver, and what, the eagle is being eaten away. But of course, he's immortal, so he does not die. But grows back, and the vulture and the eagle again feed on him. So he is told this is his place. Can you just say anything about your feel of it? What is What does she get from him that she doesn't get from Zeus's oracle? I mean, that's different. That's, what does she get from Prometheus? But she gets direction this time. But I can't hear. Yes, she gets hope. She gets hope. Uh-huh. Hope and direction.
There's clarity there.
Yes. Clarity. She actually, Prometheus deals with the names of places and a little bit of almost of a time feeling too for the first time.
There's somewhat about that.
Uh-huh. Yes.
She gets a sense of purpose.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yes. So there is a purpose, a kind of evolving purpose out of her existence. Yes. Towards the wanderer. Let's look at that wanderer a moment. He calls it her twin, doesn't he? The wanderer. And that when you look in the mirror, that's all you see.
But he also says to her, without her, you never would have left the temple.
Would never have left the temple or Hera's territory.
So he is not totally contrary.
No. He gives her credit for going with the wanderer. You've been inseparable. And you would never even have found the meadow, he said, without her. So he even puts her rambling into that.
The Odyssey and Odysseus in the land of the dead learned who he was and what he was to do. Mm-hmm. And that's what she got from this encounter.
That's right. When he went to visit Tiresias for his direction. Yes. That's true, isn't it? And he got a real sense of himself, and that's what's coming here. I see also a practical implication here, don't you, that you really can't settle on one description of yourself. When you begin to get very dogmatic about knowing exactly who you are, when people begin to talk very dogmatically in descriptions of themselves, it's almost time to move. It's almost time for... it's true we get self-knowledge. We get knowledge about our conscious being. But one should not be too dominated by an image or a title.
Betty, I have a question about her wandering, since it appears that we're going to be leaving that subject shortly.
She hopes so.
Like when you look at the places, like the places that Dionysus is supposed to have been to, those are also places where the Dionysian religion flourished and where the wine wars were fought over, and there was history to those wanderings. And I wonder if there is any history connected with the wanderings of Aya.
Well, I'm not so sure how to answer that appropriately. Oh, it must have been some. She gave her name to the Ionian Sea. She gave herself to Ionia, which is in Asia Minor, that whole section, and to the Bosphorus. So, I mean, her geographical wandering seemed to be marked. I don't see her... I don't think she did any... thing like, there weren't any heroic deeds that started a colony or started a... until she gets to Egypt.
Oh.
When she gets to Egypt, she really gets fused with Isis among Egyptian goddesses. She gets sort of fused with the goddess there. Even though she's a woman. So I don't, because of her cow form, she was more limited in making history. Except to give her a bodily presence and to name something.
What her Bulgaria is? What her Bulgaria?
And yes. Walnut is named after that mountain. The wood. They have an extraordinary walnut quality of wood.
She went past the Aegean Sea and went there. I'll have to check that out.
Check that out. Uh-huh. And so she goes over. It's almost southern Russia. Caucasus. Yeah, the Caucasus Mountains are right there. So I think that's where we came from, wasn't it?
The White Mountains.
The White
Mountains. I've read where Egypt was used as a metaphor for the...
It's like a living being. If they wanted to trace back where a god came from or a goddess, they would only trace it back as far as Crete. And then, but very likely, what came to Crete might very well have come from Egypt. But they would trace it back that far. She was considered partly his taskmistress. He had a taskmaster, but she was partly his taskmistress. It made it difficult for him.
What? The name means beloved of Hera.
Beloved of Hera. Well, he's very connected to Hera, and negatively, and then at the last she forgives him. But let's stay with Io, if we would, and now. It doesn't really so much matter what one believes when one is deeply into the destiny of the self. That's all that little section about belief isn't so important. Oh, I'm convinced or I'm not convinced. I mean, it doesn't matter too much when you're gripped by the... Usually one doesn't have that light and attitude either. Over, I'm caricaturing it, but... So the movement is there, and she does indeed arrive in Egypt. And I want to say, I just want to say a couple things about dwelling place. The final phase of the interior journey is reaching one's true dwelling place as ordained by the gods. Now, ordained by the gods, I don't have any particular religious dogma about that, but in other words, that's what it is mythologically, and it is, or by the self-world. It's in the destiny of the self-world. It's the same, perhaps, to say that one follows one's individual destiny to its ripening and fruition, and it's very important to use these organic terms for the feminine hero journey. Fruition, ripening, because it never completely leaves the earth form. It's very connected to the earth. Or earth process, natural process. She comes to dwell close to the collective unconscious, which is one of the symbolic renderings of Egypt. And perhaps alters it and enriches it by the gift of her individual journey. And here she is queen, and the kings of Egypt are descended from Io. She personally amplifies the goddess Isis. So in places she's fused with Isis's worship. Epiphys, the son, becomes founder of the great city of Memphis, and he is father of Libya, a daughter whose line is famous. The sense Hera is the goddess who loved to dwell, although she too has wanderings in her cycle. And we see Io as a kind of mirror in which Hera experiences herself in the human world. We spoke of Hera's house being very important to her. The sense of dwelling is profound. It's an aspect of the interior feminine that we do not yet comprehend, I think. And sadly today, I think one could almost describe modern, part of the modern illness is one does not have a dwelling place. One is not comfortable in oneself, within, alone, single in oneself. It is common not to know one's dwelling place. And where Io dwells, she is queen, which means that the fullness of the feminine is now come into its own. This abundance in Egypt, which had a great abundance of the feminine there in Egypt, and she has her realm. She has. It doesn't mean queen in the sense, as I interpret it, for the inner world. Doesn't really mean ruling over others as much as it implies the sense of her own decision, the sense of her own rightful power and presence. What she is. It belongs to being. All right, I think we can't go any longer. All right. Something just a little more practical about the dwelling place. It has to do with a grounded place to be. A grounded place to be, to live, to be received. It is to be at home. It is to be at home in oneself. Please don't just think this has to do with owning a condo or getting to the next real estate agent. It's a profound interior affirmation that comes from the feminine side of being, from Earth Goddess, from the ground.
It's interesting that you also learned something.
One part of it I haven't worked with yet, her stay with the Amazons and what she learns there. She does learn. She does learn from there, and she gets a further sense of direction. It helps her get her sense of path from that. Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you very much.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright CG Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.